The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Arturia, Avid, Source Elements, and RSBE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by Shay and James Richmond. We're going to be discussing software licensing with a particular slant on perpetual licenses because they've been in the news quite recently, and we're probably going to get there sooner rather than later, actually, that particular story. But welcome both, and we should just jump straight in on after a long time of what seemed like an inevitable road from Avid towards encouraging people to go onto subscriptions and kind of the phasing out of perpetual licenses. To lots of people's surprise, last week, the reinstatement of and reavailability, if there is such a word, of perpetual licenses for Pro Tools was announced, and lots of people had lots of opinions about it. I'm going to go straight to James as a Pro Tools guy. I mean, that must have been a surprise. What do you think? Where are you with this? Are you happy? Are you enraged? Are you somewhere in between?
It was very surprising. If I was a betting man, I would never have put money on Avid doing this. It seemed to be, 180 degree about face, going against the direction of travel for the company. So I think it's great. Having perpetual licenses already, I've always sort of thought that the push to try and get us into owning subscriptions, or well, taking out a subscription, felt like you're being asked to pay twice. And I guess it comes down to a sense of fairness or lack thereof. Mm. And particularly with the mindset where if you take out the subscription, then you get some extra stuff that you don't get if you've got a perpetual license. That also rankled quite a bit. So to have this completely turn around, I think is absolutely fantastic. I hope they do it for Sibelius and Media Composer too. That would be great. I'd like to be able to, at one point I did inadvertently let my Sibelius license lapse, the perpetual license, and then could only move to a subscription.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to be able to get back to a perpetual license for Sibelius. Currently there's no option. Yeah. And Media Composer 2 is something that I probably need to have access to. I mostly work in Premiere when I'm doing video now, but having Media Composer, particularly as I move more and more towards audio post, being able to save Pro Tools projects in Media Composer would be great, but I just don't like subscriptions, and the thought of paying 500 quid a year for a subscription just isn't great. The interesting thing though is, we've still got the support plan, so there is still income for Avid coming in from everyone if they want to stay current. But I thought it was really interesting bit here is that you can now choose whether or not you want to stay current or not, and you're not going to be penalized if you decide not to.
Mm.
I actually think that's the big news here. It's like, okay, well, we've all been used to being punished effectively by Avid, or that's how it's felt, and that's how people have reported it on forums and whatever. And now that's not a thing.
A point well made, because I was on a call with Avid about this, and I described that rolling back of the get current fee I like it. It's more carrot and less stick, and kind of like
make the product so good
exactly
that people want to upgrade.
Of course,
don't make them do it because otherwise we're going to take something away from you.
Yeah.
That's
we should talk to a show here just because this must be kind of like you have to what, because I mean you're a logic person. And
I'm a logic person.
The logic offer is a million miles away from all of this stuff. I mean, it's extremely simple. Explain to us how logic works. If you want to use logic, what do you have to do?
All you have to do is literally buy the app and then you can use it.
Okay. And what's the deal with updates?
The deal with updates is if your operating system can handle it, then you can do it. And that's it with logic.
It's, and do you have to give Apple more money?
No, not at all.
You can see the difference already, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge difference. And obviously, the only barrier to entry is you need a Mac. Right.
People do kind of skirt over that one a bit, don't they?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's interesting that Logic for iPad is subscription only.
Oh, I think I'd heard that, but that hadn't stuck in my mind. So, yeah. Okay, that
right,
is
so
interesting.
So they are doing some of that. But the Avid, perpetual licenses are actually not being sold via the actual Avid web store. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's right. I mean, I don't know why, but... Well, that's fair enough. Resellers exist.
Yeah. Well, so having worked for retailers, having worked for distributors and manufacturers, I imagine this is something due to staffing or infrastructure and maybe something to do with their plans going forward. Having a back end, like you would think that from a profitability perspective, that it makes much more sense to be able to sell your product direct to your customer. Mm. And broadly speaking, for a lot of people, for a lot of companies, that is true. However, you still need to have a back end that can do it, and you need to deploy resources to that. And maybe the plan is, as Avid go through this transformation, or synergy, as it's sometimes called these days, you know, venture capital coming in, taking over and making changes. So, you know, we know they're going to make changes. They don't always have to be for the worse. And we can see... That's caveated up the wazoo. But we, you know, this move in particular is really positive.
Yeah.
You know, the reintroduction of, you know, it actually fills me with a degree of hope where previously I had not very much.
That's an interesting point about the resellers, just because, I mean, there is potentially the thing about support, just because if you've bought your perpetual license from a reseller, then if there's an issue, then you talk to the reseller, not to... So I can get that. I mean, that might be part of it. We're speculating, though, so we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I'd like to get into the sort of pros and cons of perpetual licenses versus subscription-based models, and maybe try and look at the, you know, both us as the consumer, but also the company's perspective as well, because I think we can forget that they also have, you know, a lot of pressure to with updates, those sort of things. So, James, you'd know a lot about this in terms of the technical side of things. Can you think of any reasons why it would be better for companies to... you know, have the subscription-based models technically?
Well, absolutely. You know, you can forecast your income as a company much better rather than relying on, you know, ad hoc purchases of products. Or, you know, if you release an update, how many, you have to then forecast how many, well, what percentage of your user base is likely to want to upgrade, where you don't have that issue with a subscription. You know how many users you have, and you can forecast and plan that way. It's more of a numbers game. You know, the thing about the company, it's really interesting. I sort of think that in all of this, it's a social contract, not just between the company and the customer, but also between the company and their employees. And so I guess there's a feeling that the company always wins. You know, certainly when companies go through synergies or transformations, the phrase that gets used is it's just business. It's not personal. Someone does need to leave the company, but ultimately it's for the good of the company, not necessarily the person. Now, I saw a comment from an Avid employee recently on a Facebook group defending a choice that was made. I can't remember what it was. And someone had accused Avid of being out of touch. And this company employee, it's very rare to see a company employee responding in this sort of ad hoc way. And the response was, we aren't out of touch, but we just don't have endless resources. And I thought that was really interesting, in that understanding that the choices that companies make, it's not endless milking, price gouging, you know, forever. Sometimes there just has to be a decision made for the betterment of the company so that the company can keep doing it. I'm not saying that Avid or necessarily any company is, you know, blameless in about sometimes being a little bit opportunistic or mercenary. But I think it's sometimes... in the online discourse gets forgotten. You know, they're businesses, they're there to make a profit. And it's a question of whether or not that profit is, the profit that is made is delivering value for the customer.
Exactly, yeah.
Ever wondered what it's like to mix an entire album for Kanye? Or layering vocals for Chris Brown? Join your hosts, Cash and G, every fortnight as we sit down with some of your favourite artists, producers and engineers to talk everything music. Brought to you by Avid Pro Tools. That
sounds great. I mean, it is a kind of attractive thing in terms of, I'll talk about Waves maybe. It's attractive to pay, I don't know, £25 a month and get all of the Waves plugins plus creative access. And then they also offer 3 months of Splice as well. So if you're, you know, doing a lot of beats and that sort of thing, that can be way more attractive than maybe paying upfront for one plugin.
Absolutely.
So I think there are things like that. It can be very attractive to new users, I think.
Yeah. If I was starting now, I probably would take out a subscription of Pro Tools Ultimate.
If I was starting now, I'd take out loads of subscriptions. And the reason for it is I wouldn't now. But this is a piece that I've written. It's not on the site today, but by the time this podcast is out, it will be. And it's talking about the acquisitive phase that I think all of us go through when we're first getting into audio.
Yes.
And about how we just want to try all the stuff. And the wrong thing to say to someone who's in that, I mean, it can be a distraction, it can be a waste of time. But the last thing you want to say to someone who's in that is to say, no, you don't want that, because they really do. And the best way to just kind of get it out of your system, flush it out, is just to try all the stuff. And a subscription's a perfect way to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
And then drop it after 2 months when you go, I tell you what, I'm not using any of these.
The only thing, I've done that before, I've signed up for subscriptions and then I've created some tracks and then I've had to go back to it months later and realize that hardly anything works because I've gone, you know, crazy and tried out all the plugins in the project.
Yeah. Right.
And then I have to then resubscribe to get those to work again. So
okay, so the way I get around that is to render every project as audio at the end of it. And therefore, you might not be able to go back and edit the MIDI, but if it's a synth or a plugin or something, then at least you've got a capture of how it was when you finished the project, and you know, and that's part of archiving backup, and you know, ultimately for clients, you want to be able to give them those multi-track bounces and sometimes stems.
And I know you're meant to do that as well, and I also totally acknowledge that I've had exactly the same experience as you. We should do lots of things that we don't do. So
yeah, absolutely.
As a Logic user, Ashay, check out Auto Bounce. I've got an article that's about to go up on the blog soon. Auto Bounce is fantastic for this. It automates all of those track exporting stems, mixing processes beyond what Logic can do. It's quite remarkable.
That's the thing. I love all these new sort of plugins, new technology. The technology is incredible at the moment. So I want to be sort of up to date as much as possible. I don't really want to keep my MacBook kind of, you know, on older versions so that my perpetual licenses still work and things like that. And that's another topic that maybe we can talk about, is like upgrades and updates and OS systems, because those can be very confusing to, you know, most producers and musicians who aren't, you know, tech people necessarily.
Definitely. And, you know, there are people out there working with Pro Tools professionally on 5.1 cheese graters, on an HDX system, or, you know, maybe even people working professionally with HD systems. And it's a perfectly valid way of working. The problem, I guess, with the Logic route, you know, and I say this as someone who's used Logic for years and started with Logic, I think it's a great application. But part of the problem with Apple is you can rarely downgrade or go back to an earlier version. You know, if you buy a new Mac now, whatever version of the operating system it shipped with is the only version you can roll back to.
It is the cost of that integration between operating system and hardware.
I'm not disagreeing with it at all. I think, you know, it's a bit like the SoC issue when they went to the 2023 Mac Pro. You have to make a choice at some point. If you're going to go the Logic route, you kind of need to keep your hardware current to keep the software current.
Sort of diverting off from that slightly, coming back to the subscription topic more widely. I mean, we've talked about Avid, but there are other companies that are available. And what I sort of want to sort of put to you is, I mean, kind of like, yes, there are business reasons, and it's about, you know, predictable income, and, you know, if you've got subscription, then, you know, rather than relying on big integer updates that people will or won't buy, and having a big, you know, all of that stuff. We understand that you have a predictable, as a company, have a predictable income if you've got a a bunch of users who are on a subscription. But also, there are other, the ultimate manifestation of what I'm trying to talk about is the idea of a thin client, which I'm sure you'll know what that is, James.
It's a thin
client, or just that kind of idea that in a somewhere like in an institution or somewhere like that, everyone's computers are remotely administered, so everyone's on the same version. And everyone's up to date, and everyone's security patches are up to date, and all of that stuff. And this stuff, the user of that particular computer doesn't have direct control over it. Yeah. Now, you don't get that with a subscription, but if everybody gets the current version, the update made available to them by default, then that must keep more of your users on a more current version than the old school version, the old school way of doing things of having integer updates that people then have to buy, because that is going to affect so much of your support, isn't it? I mean, the majority, not the majority, but I couldn't put a number on it, but a significant number of your support calls are going to come from people running older systems who aren't up to date. And the more you can do that, that's a real drain on system. I mean,
No, you're completely on point. And support's a really interesting one. I have spent an awful lot of my life in support, and initially in corporate IT and networking, and then I did a bit when I was at SSL. It's a pretty thankless job. I had for some time sort of thinking of writing an article about that, and
being professionally patient.
Well,
I couldn't do that.
Well, there's a reason why very few people stay in support very long, because of how, frankly, the public, the customers treat the support people. They're really at the coalface taking loads of abuse. It's pretty unpleasant.
And I suppose that's because by the time somebody gets as far as support, they're really frustrated. So you just talk to people who are frustrated all day. So,
exactly. And there, as someone who is a bit of a natural troubleshooter, I sort of think of myself that way. The idea of perpetually having broken things in front of you can be a bit draining too. There is the thing about working support, there is never any end to the broken things.
Yeah, right.
So you've got to be someone who enjoys that troubleshooting. And generally people do it for 3 or 4 years and then get burnt out. I don't know many people doing it more than 10. So we come back to this question of, the social contract, I guess.
I suppose in the same way that policemen are naturally suspicious of everyone.
Exactly.
Because they just have people lie to them at work all day.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. And so I guess if whatever systems you can implement as a company to reduce your support cost is a good thing, and that is one way of doing it. Bug fixes is another.
Achoria has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Achoria.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
That point made me think about the users as well, because some of us don't mind having, to delve into issues of support and stuff like that, but personally, I prefer to have things working and just get things done quickly. So I'd rather not have to sort of look up, which version is this going to work with. I just want everything to work smoothly, perfectly on the most updated version possible. So I think that's a pro personally for subscription, for me at least.
So something that I think's kind of interesting is this idea of a perpetual license. And I saw comments when we ran the story, and it was people saying, so does that mean all the updates are going to be free forever? And it's like, well, no, that's not, they're bringing them back, and that's never what they did. However, there are companies who manage to do exactly that. Personas are an example I can think of. Whoever it is who makes Reaper, I don't know how they do it. I really don't, but kind of like this, you buy it once and it's free forever kind of thing. I don't understand how they do it. I understand why they do it, but I don't understand how they manage it, just because the software that you buy isn't the same software that you've got, 3-4 years later. It's, a lot of work's happened to it, and that has to be paid for by somebody. And I don't think there's anything bad about asking people to pay for that.
But the difference between perpetual licenses and subscriptions, I think it comes back to this this idea of you will own nothing and be happy. Do we know what that is?
It
came from Ida Auken, a Danish politician, and it's had a lot of pushback against it. This idea that in the future, everything we have in our lives, nothing will be owned. It'll all be owned by corporations, and we will effectively be renting all the things in our life. I just don't think that people have, at least now, got on board with that. Maybe in 20, 30 years, it might be the case. The thing about some of these companies is they're quite small, they're quite light, they don't have the overheads of someone like Avid. Or they're at the other end where they're actually trying to sell Macs, in the case of Apple.
It is a false comparison to draw a comparison between Apple and any other DAW manufacturer, because they're entirely different.
Yeah, like Avid have Pro Tools, Media Composer, Sibelius. They have the HDX side of things, audio interfaces, controllers like S6, S4, Venue, and then the video hardware and Nexus. That's their business model, or the products that they sell. You really can't compare it to Logic. With even smaller companies that can do it cheaper, effectively, will they be around in 20 years? Will they have changed? What I see those companies trying to do is get market share. Avid are at the top of the hill in some areas. They're in audio post. No one uses Logic for ADR. Have you ever tried doing that? I imagine it's horrible. Knowing Logic well enough, I know it will be horrible. Where in Pro Tools, it's broadly speaking fine. But some companies are out there trying to get market share. They're trying to take something away from Avid or Ableton or Logic. So if you do it cheap enough for long enough, you will get some of that market share. Will you be able to do it forever? No, I don't see that that's going to be possible. They will grandfather in some of the older clients, I imagine. I don't know that this will happen to Reaper. I'm talking generally, not specifically. But eventually they will grandfather in some of their older customers. They will have perpetual licenses, and eventually they will have to change and move any new people onto an update plan of some description or an update cost. That's pretty much what happens across the board. Or the companies go out of business. Particularly plug-in manufacturers. You know, there are loads of plug-in manufacturers that don't exist anymore.
There is an issue there of saturation of kind of, you know, plugins are not thin on the ground.
Yeah.
It takes something to stand out from that. We shouldn't be talking about this for too long because time is ticking on. But I mean, if we're just talking generally about licenses and subscriptions, perpetuals, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, James, you've already kind of like planted your flag, as it were, onto where you are with it. You're a perpetual guy. Now, this isn't because the sums of money involved, because I mean, you'll buy an Eventide H or a AX64 or something. It's this sounds to me like it's philosophical more than practical. Am I right?
It's not about the money, and it's not really philosophical. It's just that I already owned the perpetual license for Ultimate. So why would I go to a subscription? That feels like I'm being charged twice for the same thing.
But you maintained that throughout, though, didn't you? You were on an update plan.
Yeah, I've kept on an update plan, and now I currently have an Ultimate license and a Studio license, and that's because, you know, what would be great is if Pro Tools, if Avid allowed you to have two installations on a laptop and a desktop. That would be terrific. The reason that they don't, I guess, is licensing. They have iLock Cloud. That doesn't work for me in all cases. I use it sometimes.
Do you not use a hardware iLock?
I'm not going to take a hardware iLock out of the house where I might lose it and lose, I don't know, tens of thousands of pounds worth of software. Even with TLC, it's just not a thing I do. And I'm often going between two machines, you know, throughout the day, and having to move a physical license about is just annoying.
If you started from scratch and you hadn't had the perpetual licenses and stuff like that, what would be the easiest way of, you know, using software and working? What would be your workflow ideally?
Well, it depends on the cost of it. At the moment, having an Ultimate license and a Studio license, perpetual, my upgrade plan cost is $600 a year. That's what an Ultimate license costs. So I'm not really saving any money. It's more about workflow. If I was starting from scratch now, I'd probably have an ultimate subscription. I would like to be able to have it on two computers, but you can't do that with one license. You can with almost all of the plugins, but, you know, not things like iZotope. And I now preferentially choose companies for software, for plugins that allow you to have multiple instantiations of, or multiple licenses. SoftTube, I think, give you three. Arturia give you four. It's very generous. So that's how I would like to do it. But I would probably go for a subscription if I was starting from nothing right now.
I take your point about the multiple subscriptions, because, I mean, some people swap cloud licenses. I get that. Machine authorizations I've never done. I'm fine with a physical iLock, but I don't really. I move it between machines in the house now and again.
Right. No, I'm doing it every day, and so I spent a couple of weeks in London. And I needed to I had my studio license with me. I actually needed to have Ultimate with me for a feature. So what I had to do was VPN into my home or the studio network, get my wife to turn the Mac Studio on, then remote control the computer, move the license off the iLock up to the cloud, and then put it on my into iLock Cloud so I could have access to it. You know, that's a bit of a pain when they could just be a bit more generous, I think.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN-equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
Do you know the trick about just moving stuff into the cloud and then taking an empty iLock, and then when you've arrived, loading what you need onto it?
That's how I often do it if I'm traveling on a plane. If I'm going somewhere and I don't want to carry a very expensive iLock with me, you know, emptying your pockets at airports and all that.
It has to be said, like, though, Studio is an absolute. I mean, because I have Ultimate and I've got a Studio license as well, and Studio is everything I will ever need away from my studio machine.
I can't remember what it was. There was one, it might have been something to do with batch editing or something.
And Free is perfect. It's not called Free. Intro. Having that as a drop-down option when it doesn't see a valid license is just great.
Well, I've got that exactly, to be able to open up Pro Tools. And I've got that as the only hard drive authorization on my MacBook Pro.
Isn't it? Interesting. I bet you're confused by all these shenanigans we have to jump through, though, Ashaya. What do? I just open Logic.
Saying that, I do travel quite a bit to different studios to record with clients and mix and stuff. So I do need my iLock. Somehow I haven't lost it yet, but I do have a bag that I keep. It's got a sort of secret zip.
Have TLC and the total, all that business.
It's probably not for me. It's probably not losing it. It's probably that it gets damaged, and the amount of hassle in my life if it gets crushed or something. You know,
when they change to the all metal one, because I mean, do you remember the old transparent blue, like super snappings?
Yeah. When I worked for a manufacturer, most of the issues that we had with licensing was around iLock.
And then the twos weren't that good either, really, with that silly little cap that just you lost and it got snapped anyway. And I'm not even sure what it was for. But no, the current iLocks are really good.
So it is kind of weird how with iLock, some companies allow hard drive authorization, some allow iCloud. Pretty much, I think everyone allows the iLock physical key to be licensed. But I don't know about you, but I find licensing with an iLock to be a bit annoying, because sometimes, particularly if you're traveling, there might be something that you can't authorize to a hard drive, but maybe you can put it on iLock Cloud. But then if you're not on someone's network, you have to tether your phone. Like this sort of messing about can be a can be a bit annoying.
I mean, I've never spoken to Pace about this. I don't know. But I mean, reading between the lines, it looks very much to me as if the hardware iLock is the very top level of security. And, you know, while it's all pretty secure, I think that's just kind of like, you know, if you're not messing about, then hardware iLock only is as safe as it gets.
Mm. Yeah. But there's no way of, is there a way of securing an iLock from theft if you walk out, like you're in someone else's studio, it's plugged into your laptop, what's to stop someone just coming along and pinching it? You know, that's also another reason why I like to...
Mm. Is there no way of sort of cancelling, like you can do with a card, just cancel it?
I've never checked.
So I think the way it works with iLock is, if you never put it back on the network again.
Oh, you need to. Hang on. It's because you need to plug it in once every kind of. Is it 90 days or something?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
For the TLC thing. And that's why if it's covered under TLC, is it called TLC or is that just like.
Yeah, total loss.
Then if somebody has got your iLock, then they'll only have access to the licenses on it for a fixed amount of time before they disappear.
And it's not so much losing the licenses permanently, it's more how much hassle am I going to have to go through to get back the thing that I own or have a license for. You know, there's probably 30 manufacturers on my iLock, and whilst I think TLC, if you do get temporary licenses, but do you have to go back to the you used to have to go back to the manufacturers and say, this has happened, can you please issue a new license? I don't know if that's still the case. It hasn't happened to me. But I do remember it, again, when I worked on the other side for a manufacturer, the amount of hoops that people have to jump through to get those licenses back. And, you know, these are the customers that are not cracking the software. These are the good customers that are, you know, buying their software and using it, and they kind of get punished for it.
Yeah. It feels like a lot needs to be done to get organized in that respect.
RSPE Audio Solutions design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
Well, I mean, bringing it back kind of right out wide, what I was going to kind of suggest to you, James, having that sort of like broader IT experience, when I speak to a friend of mine, really experienced IT professional, has nothing whatsoever to do with audio. He's just strictly sort of like, you know, massive network installs and stuff. And he just kind of shrugs when I talk about all of this activity there is in discussions about subscriptions, because for that kind of, you know, business type software, subscriptions are totally normal and nobody even thinks about them. I mean, is that what you found?
Well, I've been out of corporate IT for 20 years now, so my information, I guess, is a little bit out of
okay,
date.
But
yeah, there was an acceptance of that, and also the cost of some of these things. Like if we think about what a Pro Tools artist or studio license, a perpetual license, actually costs, compare that to something like SolidWorks. Like, oh my God,
how much does SolidWorks cost?
It's thousands and thousands of pounds, and depending on what options you've got, it's hugely expensive. It's even more than, you know, if we talk about something in Pro Audio, Cedar. Like the cost of a Cedar license is more like a traditional IT model of pricing. It's very, very expensive. But the, you know, compared to what Avid sell, you know, you think of audio interfaces and you think of the S6, even so the S4 support contract for hardware is £1,400 a year in the UK plus VAT. So that's like more than an S1 every year just to keep your hardware up to date.
But that is
supported.
Aimed at a different kind of client. There was a piece that I wrote on the blog after a chat I had at NAMM last year, and it was just it's kind of related to the consequence of downtime and depending on who's buying those kind of products.
Exactly.
And so it's kind of
a channel module for an S4 is £14,000. Like if that goes down, it's very inconvenient and then it's very expensive. So the support contract is, you know, understandable. I guess the point is that Pro Tools now costs less than it ever has. You could get artists for, what is it, 100 quid, something like that? And if you're a student, it's 9 or something, 89, something like that. It's not very much. And yes, there are products out there that are cheaper, but if you eventually want to be a professional working in the industry, particularly in audio post, it really helps to have, I guess, an understanding of Pro Tools.
Well, it's lowering the barrier of entry as well, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, it's been great, I think.
We need to move things along because we've gone pretty long here. So we need to go to Find of the Week.
Fantastic. James, what is your Find of the Week?
My Find of the Week, it's two things. It's a mouse and a piece of software to control the mouse. I've been trying to get a bit more efficient with navigating in Pro Tools and Logic. And so I was recommended this mouse by Razer. It's called a Basilisk V3 Pro. And it's got five extra buttons on it. It's a nice product, but it doesn't show up in SoundFlow. All of the extra buttons are just third mouse buttons. But I found this application called Steer Mouse, which is only $20, I think. And it sees all the individual mouse buttons. And you can then set up macros. So in Pro Tools, I have different buttons on the mouse that allow me to switch tools and edit modes and zoom modes. And I can use the scroll wheel for horizontal or vertical scrolling, as well as zooming. And I can redefine... using the command option control and shift keys and combinations of those to do some quite clever things. It's been really great. Anyone who's going out to try this particular mouse, they're a PC brand, Razer, so you do need to first reassign all the buttons away from their original function, and there isn't a Mac app to do that. But once you've done that, it's really great, and I'm a lot faster now in Pro Tools particularly.
Joe, this is funny. It's I'm sure it's a great product, but I just looked at it and these gaming things, they always have the design aesthetic of like looking like the enemy ships in a sci-fi.
Oh my goodness.
It looks like a Klingon warbird or something.
Yeah, you can turn the RGB off. Well, I tell you what it does have that's great. It's got a dock that you can put your mouse on every evening that charges it through, you know, wireless charging. And so, you know, every evening I turn the computer off, I put the mouse on its dock and it comes back the next day fully charged. I don't have to mess around with it. That's a nice thing.
It is funny. I get mocked quite regularly because I'm not really on top of my whole mouse game. Listen. I've just got some mouse that's sort of like from, I don't know, some PC from like 20 years ago, and it refuses to die, and I don't think about it. But it's when I go, I'm going, how old is your mouse? I'm going, oh, all right, yeah, okay, you got me there.
I thought my mouse was old. It's just sort of one of those Apple ones that's got the battery powered instead of USB.
I think mine's from the 90s. It's I don't know. I had another one.
Is it wired or wireless?
Oh, it's wired. Yeah, I don't care.
Right, right.
No, okay. Honestly, it works and I don't think about it. It's just right there.
Yeah.
One day it'll break and I'll replace it, but hey, whatever. Shay, what's your final week?
Yeah, I mean, talking of space travel, have you checked out Slate Digital Infinity Base?
Well, no.
No.
No, but you could probably check it out.
I'm checking it out right
now. No,
it's
interesting. It's got this really sort of cool kind of outer space GUI.
Okay.
It's a sort of cool reactive visualizer. And then there's sort of different modes and they look like planets in the solar system. And it's just essentially an all-in-one kind of base sculpting tool. It just looks pretty fun. It sounds pretty good as well. And I just like plugins that look futuristic.
You need this mouse then. You'll like it.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds good.
Designed by a 15-year-old boy. It looks like it's about sub-bass synthesis more than sort of like dirtying up bass and making it more audible.
I mean, you can add sort of character and all sorts of things. There's different settings and it's not terribly complicated, but it certainly is something fun.
Okay, it's got a punchy mode, you know, which kind of makes stuff a bit more, but this warm thing, dual band subharmonic synth, octava style. Octavas are actually something that I've tried to make using just kind of, you know, using plugins. And yeah, I've never really come across a satisfying octave effect.
Eventide, I think, are probably still the best.
That's probably isn't it? I remember trying to do it using Rectify in Pro Tools. It's terrible.
No,
it doesn't sound good at all.
Yeah, I reach for guitar pedals when I need an octave. I've got this old Ibanez OT10, which I think the old brown
Boss pedal that, you know, and it's like, you know, all of
that. Yeah, yeah. And people get obsessed with tracking with octavas. What I like it when they don't track well and they sound gnarly and awful. I think that's where it gets interesting.
Yeah, you want wrong notes? I've got you.
Yep.
I've got this.
Got plenty of those. What's your find of the week, Julian?
Oh, right, mine. Mine is Blue Cat Audio's Axiom, which guitar amp sim thing. Which I've used the free one before. It's just got two amps, and it really struck me of like this sounds really good. So I checked out the full version, and something that. Basically, it does an AC30 really well, and for that, if no other reason, it's just like this sounds absolutely spot on. It's really really good. I've done loads of other things as well, but just doing a decent AC30, it's like oh well, thank you at last.
That's the benchmark, isn't it? I think the litmus test.
Haven't you got some like quad cortex or something like that? Haven't you got some hardware bottling, James?
Oh me, I know. I don't have that one. I've got an XFX.
That's probably what I meant.
Three, and I've got a Kemper. Which are both fantastic, but getting that slightly on the edge distortion, like modelers and plugins are really good at high gain, and they can do an okay clean sound. Just getting that
this the in between stuff's difficult.
That's the difficult
check
thing.
Check this out. Getting a matchless, you might well like sound. It. I wish it was AX DSP. It's not, and that's a real shame. But
right, yeah.
But no, this
that's a whole other topic, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Developing
but
for those.
It's extremely good. So yeah, I mean, check it out. I mean, you're a guitar player. Check it out and see what you think, James, because you might like it. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you to Sharon and James. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.